One of the lessons I learned from time in the Coast Guard was in a storm, you got to keep one eye on the horizon and one the other eye on the wave. Because if you take your eye off the horizon, you drive around in circles. But if you take your eye off the wave, it's going to slam you and roll you over.
There will always be somebody stronger, faster, and smarter than you. Surviving depends on your adaptability to change. Those who are the most adaptable are dialed in. Hello, hello. Welcome to the show. This is Dialed In. I'm your host, Kyle Burt. I've got a great show lined up for you today, all about leveraging the power of a crisis to accelerate transformation. It's interesting the times we live in, right? We've gone from talking about this thing called digital transformation and beating that marketing term into everybody's heads over and over again to like actually living it. And now we're, you know, not 100% on that other side, but we are. We're coming out through the clouds onto the other side. We can see it. And things have changed. Things have been accelerated. So now we actually have insight and a plan of what happened and how to execute on that. And we're going to have a great talk about that with our guest, Craig Hopkins, in just a second. I will introduce him and bring him out. This man is passionate about making people's lives better through innovation, exceptional experiences, data, and technology. He constantly praises these words: lead well, serve better. Former U.S. Coast Guard, second class petty officer, spent 20 years developing technology programs and strategy for USAA and climbing the ranks of leadership, and now currently serves as the chief information officer for the city of San Antonio. Let's bring out Craig Hopkins.
Hey, thanks, Kyle.
Hey, how's it going, Craig? Welcome to the show.
I felt like there needed to be a really big cheer there. I'm sorry. I felt like we were going to cheer for you.
Oh, I forgot to press the music. that's all good. So, Craig, welcome to the show. Well, let's get right into your story here. Help us set the stage with some context, right? I did a good intro for you, but let's set the stage with some context on your background, a little bit of your backstory.
Sure. Well, so let's do the shout out first. I'm wearing my Coast Guard shirt today, because today is the 230th birthday of the United States Coast Guard, August 4th. So a big shout out to all my Coastie friends and family over the years. The core values of the Coast Guard are honor, respect, and devotion to duty. I've carried with me through all my both military and civilian career. And so I just want to say thank you and happy birthday to them. But to your point, Kyle, the setup is, I've had an incredible opportunity in my professional career to lead in very different places, in IT, on the business side, in strategy roles, in procurement roles. I've had the luxury at USAA of playing having five different careers in a 20-year period. And so the beauty of that is you're never an expert at anything, right? But you understand. You can walk in the shoes of people in different roles and different situations with different skills. But the one thing that's been constant in every one of those roles has been to create great experiences for your customers. And your customers can be your employees. They can be your paying customers. And in my current role, they can be your residents. And so if you always start from there, then you find really smart people who understand technology and process and everything else you need to. But the key focus is employees and customers first.
Oh, yeah. No, I love that. So I recognize that the U.S. Coast Guard has a significant meaning to you. Obviously, you served there. And I'm wondering if the methodologies and frameworks you kind of learned there, I assume they would apply. And I wonder if you could elaborate on how that kind of applies to where you are today.
Yeah, I would say, well, first of all, you know, if you try to say the things you learned about technology in the 80s and 90s apply today, they're radically different. But what never changes is culture and leadership. And so what I did learn a lot in my time in the Coast Guard that I've carried with me is purpose, right? People will do anything for you when they understand purpose and they see themselves connected to that purpose. One of the things, you know, personally, is I joined the Coast Guard, a young kid going the wrong direction, and I needed something to get my life straight. And what I learned from it was something greater than me and purpose. And I sucked it up. I loved that. Even when you didn't like the work you were doing sometimes, you always liked the reason you were doing it. You understood that. And so what I've been able to carry through as I talk to folks is what is the purpose of our organization? The culture of our organization is organized to drive that purpose, and then helping people see their value, their skill, their expertise, whatever it is as an individual on a small team connected through the dots to that purpose. At USAA, we're a very mission-driven organization. It was about the financial security of our military members who were serving and who had served. And so it could rally around that. When I got to the city, it was, the question was, well, who wants to work for a city? I'm sure all those people are lazy and they're just trying to collect a paycheck. You know, all those misnomers we hear come to, none of that is true in the city of San Antonio. People are driven by a purpose to serve the residents of our community the best that they can. And so our job as leaders is to give them the tools, to give them the culture, to give them the freedom and the support so they can achieve that purpose because they're doing the work.
No, very well stated. And I agree with everything you just said. I mean, it's really cool that you can find a place like that. Like you said, like it's the city of San Antonio, but it's unlike what people think of when they think of the city of technology, right? So it was great that you found that. Now, what's been going on in San Antonio, right? So obviously the pandemic, everyone's affected everywhere, but that's what we're talking about today is we're talking about, not the specifics, but, kind of the lessons learned and what you've had to do to organize over the last like 90 to 120 days, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the whole country, end of February, beginning of March, we all prepared for something that we weren't really sure what it was, but we followed our local government and advice, whether that was state or city, and we were no different. I remember specifically that first 2 weeks in March, we had been preparing since mid-January with doing business continuity planning, building scenarios, and we just made a very simple scenario for our team and said, assume that a pandemic hits and 25% of your workforce can't come to work. How do you keep the city running when 25%? We have 13,000 employees in the city of San Antonio. We're the seventh largest city in the United States by geography and by size. And we have over 500 square miles of city proper. So a very large geographical city with a lot of employees and 42 different departments. And we said, our job is to continuity of government and continuity of operations, no matter what hits us, a hurricane, a forest fire, whatever. This is just going to be a different kind of event like that. Little did we know, it really wasn't an event like that. What didn't happen is we didn't have high absenteeism as fast as we thought, because in San Antonio, we did a very good job of staying home and keeping the curve flat. And we did about 40 or 50 cases a day. We had very low deaths. We managed through that first couple of months. A lot of things we had to do internally to prepare the city for that, but we were able to manage for those few months, I thought very effectively with the COVID cases. But then Memorial Day came and other changes happened in the state of Texas. And we grew from 50 cases a day to a high of about 1,600 cases a day. We're averaging still around 800 cases a day. And that has made a huge spike in San Antonio. And so here we are 6 months in, and we're still managing as much as we did on day one, basically.
Wow. Yeah. And as Robin pointed out too, correct her if she's wrong here, because she's asking, wasn't San Antonio one of the first cities affected by the pandemic, and how did it show up?
Yeah. So we were one of the first cities because some of the folks from the cruise lines and who had come from China were actually quarantined at Lackland Air Force Base. And so the virus was not in our community. We were not one of the first ones that had the virus in our community. But we were one of the first cities who had to prepare for the virus in a quarantined or in an isolated state. So that did give us a little bit of leg up that there was, what this virus was and what you needed, whatever they knew about it at the time. But still, for the most part, we're very familiar with working with the military here in San Antonio. And we've been asked to do special tasks like that in the past. It kind of felt like a one-off thing. We really didn't know how it was going to affect us. Clearly, as some of the West Coast towns started reporting, especially in the Northwest, in their community early, that's when we realized it was going to be something that would affect us. And then Friday the 13th, 13th of March, which is the day I always remember, was the end of a very long week when we basically said, we're going to shut down everything we can shut down and send home everybody we can send home. And that's where it really kind of sank in on us.
Wow, that decision sounds like a heavy weight on you. What has been the morale and the spirits of, you know, your staff, and how do you how have you kind of managed that, right? Everyone's going through, you know, collectively you guys have this mission to achieve, but individually people are like really concerned about their family and they're concerned about their own health. So like, you know, you got to balance personal with, I have this mission still, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer your question kind of in two different perspectives, because it's the way I try to think of it is from a leadership or an executive standpoint, I'm one of a large team who are playing multiple roles, but those roles really were the concept of a unified command, which was fighting the virus in the community, which is the health department, the fire department, EMS, the hospitals. That's a unified command. And myself and my team were responsible for supporting that command with data, dashboards, technology, operations, a lot of different things there. Then the second thing was an internal operational team, which we call a continuity of operations. So again, 13,000 employees, 42 departments, what critical city services must continue and which ones can we stop? And so I led we called it a COOP team. Some will call it a business continuity team, basically to go through that process as another unified command. And the two commands had to synchronize together at times. And then my third responsibility was, as CIO, playing an integration still role across the departments and managing my own department of 340 people specifically. So I would answer your question, first of all, in that sense is, morale was really good for a long period of time across those kind of three primary leadership roles. But we were learning how to do those things again. We're very good operations, emergency operations center. We can handle a hurricane like you wouldn't believe. But you know, that lasts a week or 2 weeks. And what we weren't really prepared for was an incident that was going to go on for months and months at the same tempo. So we've been running at a very fast tempo for almost 6 months now. And that has fatigue, obviously. But the second way I want to answer that is I'll talk about the folks on in my crew. They have been phenomenal. I've asked them to work extraordinary long hours. I've asked them to pick up everything and work completely from home. I've asked them to come in on shifts and work in the field as essential personnel, side-by-side first responders, and by public health officials. I've asced them in some cases to don the same PPE gear. They're IT folks. And I said, I need you on the front line. And I would do it myself. And went out there myself. I would never ask anybody to do something I wouldn't do myself or didn't feel that we could provide safety. And people would raise their hand and say, I'm ready to go next. Put me on a shift. So I'm incredibly proud of what people have done through this on my team. But the reality is fatigue sets in, and when you're already running fast and then you're running extremely fast and then it doesn't go away, people's mental health become my major concern. Less about productivity, less about even quality at times. We don't want to make mistakes, but I'm really concerned about people's mental health. And what I'm really starting to feel now is with the fatigue, especially for my employees who have young children, is that the combination of working from home, working shifts, not knowing if my kids are going to school or I have to school them at home, taking care of my parents, other people at home, that has just started to hit a height, a wave crest, if you want to think of it that way, where people are starting to go, I need a break, because there's too much uncertainty and this has gone on for too long. So my role and my team is to understand that and to get people breaks. And I tell people, you're taking vacation, even if you don't leave your house, it's a staycation, whatever it is, you got to disconnect from work because this isn't going away anytime soon. And we got to keep people as strong as we can.
Oh yeah. I mean, just think about, you know, all the vacation plans that were ruined and, you know, even a staycation can seem like not a vacation if you're, you know, we love our families, but you're still in the same place. with your kids running around, with your parents that live with you, if that's the case, like, it's, you know, it doesn't seem like quite a vacation, right? So you need that break. Eric had a great question here. Thanks, Eric. He said, how many of the pandemic related policies changes do you see becoming the new norm?
So the work at home clearly is one for the city. You know, when I was at USAA, we had variations of work at home policies. We even would hire people, like most private companies, from other states and let them work in their home state, and in some cases, depending on the technology. But in the city, it was still everything happens downtown. Everybody comes to the office. Everybody still meets in physical meetings. And even though we had remote work policies, they were primarily for a day here, a day there kind of things. So the one thing that will absolutely stick, which I am incredibly proud of, is we have introduced a 5-day a week work from home. You don't have a desk at the office assignment for those who can do that. Some people thought that was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and then they did it for a couple of months and they're like, get me back to the office, right? I get that. We did a survey in IT, about 17% of our staff said that, you know, when it's safe to come back, I wanna come back. I miss people, I can't work in my home, there's too much going on, whatever that is. But about 60% of the staff actually said, my home is conducive and my job is conducive. And I will give up ever coming back downtown again if I can work from home full time, and then performance and productivity are factored in there. So I got to give the city credit. From that lesson, we immediately built that assignment, which wasn't in our toolkit before, and we're implementing that now. That's one big one. The other one, which everybody has experienced, is the concept of virtual meetings. And so it's not just we can do things like this virtually. It's actually that you can be more effective and efficient doing things like this virtually. So second week in, we were doing command center three times a day in a large conference room. And then we hit the first weekend and we said, are we all coming in on the weekend? And I turned to the city manager, who's our CEO, and I said, we need to learn how to do this virtually. Tell everybody to stay home and let's meet three times a day virtually and let's figure it out. And it was very clunky. And so it's not necessarily the change in policy that you can have virtual meetings. What I think has really changed is people have learned how to leverage both in-person and virtual as appropriate in order to build relationships and get things done. So it doesn't feel like a policy change, but it does feel like a relationship change across a lot of our command structure. And then on a more technical standpoint, what has changed in some of our capital spending and our planning is, at least in the city, is a bigger focus on scale. I've been working very hard the last 3 years that I've been at the city is to focus on platforms and enterprise solutions, not one-off departmental solutions. We've done a great job with that, but what we really haven't done is built it to scale where you could go, you could have your workforce not in your office and still be as productive as they were in the office. We had about 200 people working remotely of 13,000 when we started, and I now have 2,800 full-time people working from home, and we've had to scale up a lot of our systems in order to support that, and we need to make that long-term.
No, that's wonderful. I mean, now we're talking about the acceleration of transformation, right? So that you actually lived and you're still living to some extent, right? So during that acceleration of transformation, you know, what would you say was some of the bigger challenges you guys had?
Clearly our public facing services, like any organization, everybody's got a digital plan that designed to build apps and move to the website, all that kind of stuff. We've been doing it for years. It's part of the core of what I do. I learned at USAA, you don't build for the web or mobile, you build for channel of choice. So you learn your customer and you build for the channel that they choose to interact with you. I don't think the city either, like most municipal governments, either didn't have the funding or wasn't able to look up from their services to say, we offer our services one way, and as long as people can come to the office or call us, we'll take care of you. Not that people didn't have a desire not to make it better. It's just time, thinking, budget, those types of things to do that. So what has clearly happened is all the I told you so's that have popped up in the last few months, right? You can't operate this way anymore. You have to operate in a multi-channel environment. And you can't just assume that a web or an app is the way it's going to solve, because 22% of our population in San Antonio lives in a digital divide. They don't have broadband in the house. And so to assume everybody can go to your web page isn't right either. So you've got to build a multi-channel relationship with your consumers in this case, and you need to solve for their situation that they're in. We're talking a lot about COVID cases, but the reality of what's happening in our city with a lot of other cities is the economic impact of what's gone on in the stay at home and the COVID cases. So a huge amount of response for utility assistance and housing assistance and food assistance and all those things. And the traditional ways of interacting with those people are face-to-face in the homes, and you can't do that in this environment. So it's forcing people to innovate. I got a great logo that I stole off the internet a long time ago that said, "Who led your digital transformation at your company?" And under it is three checkboxes, and it says CEO, CIO, or COVID. And everybody's checking COVID, right? Because no matter how much the CEO and CIO pushed for these digital transformations, it takes the event like we're in right now to force you to make decisions in the event and take advantage of that event every time you can for good.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. It has forced a lot of things for us. And you know, that was a great survey. You actually ran that survey in one of our happy hours too. And you know, we had kind of a similar response. I mean, it's kind of a trick question, right? Like CEO, CIO, COVID. But you know, obviously COVID has been the driving force for many organizations. Well, what are you guys seeing initially as the economic downturn as opposed to that you guys are seeing in San Antonio?
Sorry, Kyle, you got a cutout in there in the middle of the question. I missed it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so what are you guys seeing in terms of, I don't know if you can share anything, if you have stats or numbers or just overall just perception of it. What are you guys seeing in terms of like the total economic downturn? Like what are you seeing trending right now on the city of San Antonio from like businesses shutting down and whatever else?
Yeah, I'm probably not the right guy to quote off real stats there, but I will tell you in San Antonio, if you've ever been here to San Antonio and enjoyed the Riverwalk, which is an incredible place, we have a significant tourism and conference income that comes through what we call our hotel tax. And so if you come and enjoy a big margarita and some great Mexican food on the river, you're probably staying at a hotel, and that's how we get our hotel tax out of that. That has evaporated. Clearly, there are no conferences. Hotels are pretty much empty. It's still a little eerie walking around downtown on the Riverwalk when you used to be shoulder to shoulder, and now you're the only one walking the river. And so that's been going on for 6 months. And I think to your point, it's probably going to go on for another 6 months at least. And so that has a significant impact in not only the taxes that the city collects, but think of the hundreds of thousands of people who are employed by those restaurants, by those hotels, by the convention centers. And as you can imagine, they are probably not the folks that are in the upper economic ranks. And so it has a huge effect on that part of our community that when they can't work and they don't have access to income, they can't pay their rent. And so we're seeing some significant hits both on the sales tax side, which comes to the city, as well as the employment side. That's just one sector. Small businesses in general are being affected, like in other cities as well. Lots of mom and pop family restaurants around the towns are impacted. So what I have seen on a positive note is a significant investment in CARES Act dollars from the city that we've redirected back into workforce development and small businesses. We've also done bulk buys for PPE gear for small businesses, and we distribute those at no charge to every small business as well as we can get our hands on them. So doing what we can to assist there, and then utility, rent, and housing assistance, major funds have been set up both at the county and city level to support with that.
Wow, no, that's incredible. I mean, it really makes you count your blessings and just have that gratitude that, you know, that some of us are the fortunate few, you know, not everybody else out there is. Jeff Friedman had a question. Let me see if I can find the question here. Technology resources scarce, expensive, post-COVID city-state government revenues impacted, in-house staff facing furloughs, staff and resources likely canceled, yet workload increased, planned plus unplanned initiatives due to pandemic. Given continued difficulty to get staff, what are you doing differently from technology perspective to increase productivity?
Hey, that's a long question. But all those things are true. We had to furlough 300 employees when this started, all based on that hotel tax, as an example. I am proud to say that almost all of those 300 employees came back to work yesterday in other parts of the city. And so that's incredible that we were able to do that. But we are in a hiring freeze. We're in a budget crunch as well. And so all those statements are absolutely true in city government right now. So what I'm trying to do to respond to that is, my title is a CIO. I'm not a CTO. I have a CTO, I have an operations officer, I have a CISO that all work on my team. So I don't have to play those roles, thank God, because I'm not qualified to play those roles. So I really love my CIO role because it allows me to think more strategically across the departments and across the 13,000 employees. And so as I do that, as I play a strategy role, what I do is I pretend I'm the COO. And I give this advice to a lot of people, and I don't mean to diminish any roles here, but pretend you're the COO. And even if you have a COO at your organization, partner with your COO in some way and help that person strategize. So the question is, what are you going to do with the investment you have? What are you going to invest in as you go forward? So productivity has been good at this point. So we have not said we're going to get more for less at this point. We're going to basically have the same amount of investment, the same amount of people. And my expectation is we're going to get the same amount of productivity. We're using that as a guideline. But what I was able to do with this, with our city manager, who's the CEO, playing that COO kind of thinking, was focus in on two areas. One, this is an incredible opportunity to reconfigure our operations. And two, this is an even a bigger opportunity to rethink our service delivery. And so those two mantras have really risen up. And so reconfiguring operations is, why do you have 32 phone lines, individual phone lines coming into the city based on department resources? It's time to reconfigure that operation into an integrated call center, as an example, to give us back end. But at the same time, we need to rethink the service delivery, because not everybody wants to call. But if you do call, you should have an incredibly different experience than if you call today. So doing those two things together, thinking about the outside in service delivery and the inside out operations, gives us an incredible experience for our residents and should increase our productivity as we go forward. So as I'm going through budget right now, I am re-earmarking my staff into products. We've been doing product alignment for a while. We have some agile teams set up in our shop, but I'm more worried about people who understand products and life cycles of products. So we're reestablishing our core enterprise products. We're getting our roles reestablished around who's responsible for those products, and we're pivoting our investments to those enterprise products. So things like case management, which has become critical in a COVID crisis, managing cases, contact centers, as I talked about, not call centers, integrated contact centers, content management, the ability to reuse and develop and push content across platforms, not in individual silos. And my fourth one is around contract or grant or financial management, bringing those things together. So those four platforms are our primary focus that we're using this in the city to reconfigure operations and rethink service delivery.
No, I love that. That was very insightful. Thank you for sharing that. Eric had another question from Eric of the city of Irving. Said they were challenged with legal requirements around city council meetings and allowing public to speak while protecting against Zoom bombing. Mm. So what have you guys thought through that as well? And without getting too specific, because we are live, But what are your thoughts and framework around that?
Yeah, that every public meeting opportunity has that problem. So we kept public meetings open in a very controlled council setting with social distancing and thing for a long time for the very that very reason is we did not want to lose the right to public comment. And we didn't have a better way to solve it. So we've actually got a way to solve it now, and I'll get there. But what we actually did is sent council members home, and they WebExed into the meeting. Not all of them. How about four out of the 11? So we could create space on the dais for social distancing. So they took turns coming in and out, and then we clearly the council setting itself for social distancing as we went forward. But the sole purpose we kept doing that instead of going to virtual meetings was to keep public comment. What we've now been able to do is actually in our virtual meetings is actually have public comment in three different ways, maybe four. One is you can email in public comment and it will be read on your behalf. Two is you can call in and leave a voicemail and they will transcribe and read your voicemail on your behalf. And the third, which is a little trickier, but we've been playing with it, is we actually will put you in a call queue. And when it's your time for public comment, you'll be able to speak live, but under your time restrictions, you still have your 3 minutes and we'll turn you off in that sense. So they are actually doing live and recorded public comment now in our WebEx meetings when we go to virtual meetings, but we're still trying to keep our A session full council meetings as physical as possible.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you guys are taking full advantage of your contact center application, right? Because that's what it's all about, that omni-channel and where they want to be reached, you know, and using it in different ways. Robin said, how has your security affected choices in technology platforms? It's a good question to bring up because as you have to accelerate the transformation, you have to make these decisions much faster, much quicker. So you can't really take 3 months to come up with, you know, what would be the solution. You need it like in 3 days, three hours, you know?
Yeah, I will tell you since this started in the middle of February, I have only bought two new pieces of software in the last six months. For that very reason, I was not willing to go out and try to procure, which is a whole nother conversation about city procurement, or install new things that we didn't have experience with in a crisis environment. So we've declared reuse as of platforms for the last 3 years, but we've always gone through kind of an analysis to say, we have this, let's try to use it. Okay, let's compete it against something else that's new. In this, we locked it down and said, we're not buying anything new. So the only two things I bought new, I bought under a health emergency provision were because we needed something that we didn't have quickly in order to solve a public health problem. And they were very small things. So to answer the question directly, I didn't have a lot of security decisions that I had to make during this event because it was already software and hardware that we already had installed and knew it well. What a lot of people don't know is bad guys take advantages of events as well. And so very quickly, people started disguising themselves as health professionals with COVID requests and started bombarding us with phishing campaigns. And the bot attacks increased dramatically, focusing on Metro Health employees because they know they were overwhelmed and tired and may make mistakes. And so in that sense, we had to ring the fence again to make sure that it was the same practices we've always had, but knowing that certain targets had changed. Many times we call it whaling, right? It's phishing, but for the big executives, this whaling actually started focusing on people who were working 24-hour day shifts and were tired and seeing if they could get them to do something wrong. So in that sense, security took a different kind of targeted approach.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Interesting to see how that's changed. Sean Rode, good to see you, sir. He had a great question. Which technology services do you see growing in importance with having a remote workforce?
We can do alphabet soup of all the greatest virtual tools and collaboration tools that everybody's been exposed to. For us in the city, we made a commitment to Office, Microsoft Office 365 a couple years back, and we're exploiting that suite every way we can, which has been very helpful for are getting common platform. You can have your arguments for or against, but there's a huge argument for pick a platform and stick to it. And I would say the most important aspect of that has been Teams. The ability to collaborate virtually, see people's faces, get people included in relationships while sharing documents, while doing all those other things. So I remind people it's just a SharePoint site on steroids, but it's the interface is so easy to use. It's actually too easy to use sometimes because people love to click the call Teams button and everybody gets called at the same time when they don't need to be. But so that's probably been one of the biggest ones. We're a WebEx shop as well. So we basically use Teams and Office internally. And then when we do things with the community, we'll use WebEx. So it's a little broader and easier to use. Those two things are probably the most collaborative tools. We also use Workspace and VPN as our core platforms for folks to get into our network, so they can do that. Clearly, we went from a desktop environment to a laptop environment very quickly, even though users told us they didn't want laptops, and suddenly now they do. And so that's all user preference as well. But I think the one thing that I want to be clear is the concept of a remote workforce, as we all know, is not new. I think we put thousands of people into a remote environment and they didn't want to be. I think that's the big difference that I've learned through this is we forced people to go home and to try to be as productive as possible during a crisis. We didn't ask who would like to work from home. We just made you go home. And then we did everything we could to support you. In that, people have said, hey, I never thought I would like this. And I think I like it. I'd like to do it. And which is great. And other people have said, stop forcing me to do this. The minute it's safe, I want to come back. So the services I think that we've really been able to learn and provide is about how to have better relationships at the front line when you don't get to see your people every day. So one thing I do is I huddle with my management team every day at 11:15. We do a Teams huddle. Sometimes we have important things to talk about. Other times we're just checking in. I make them turn their video screens on so I can see their face and they can see mine. And then every week, Wednesday, I have a Teams meeting with all 340 of my employees. And it's a commander's intent session where basically I get to say, here's what's on my mind, here's what we're thinking about. And then I get to do some call outs for teams and celebrations and so forth. But keeping people who are remote connected visually and through these collaboration tools, and then having the frontline manager who's talking to you every day by phone or whatever your choice is, checking your performance, checking your mental health, and making sure you're still taken care of has been more important than any technology.
Some wise words there. And I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, but more than likely, and we're not futurists here, but more than likely the future looks like a hybrid environment where you got the remote workers and the people in the office. And previously, yeah, we've been able to do it, but it's like, you know, the remote workers kind of always felt a little bit excluded. Yeah. And now they're going to feel a lot more included, right? Because now we've kind of been forced into this, you know?
So, yeah. But I still think the key there is not training the remote worker. It's training the supervisor, the frontline supervisor. That, to me, that's the weakness that we as leaders need to make sure we work on is does your team leader, does your boss, your immediate frontline boss know how to manage a remote worker versus an in-office worker based on your own skills, your own preferences, your own tools, whatever that may be. And so you can't be a cookie cutter frontline manager anymore. You have to understand the individual and you get to know your people. And I mean, just to sidetrack real quick, I have an employee who called me the other day and said, Craig, I can't work my normal shift anymore. I got to take care of my kids. And I'm a single mom and I love what I do, what I'm doing, but I'm going to have to quit. I have to take care of my kids. And I said, no, you don't. Let's swing shift you. Let's figure out how to get you on a different shift. I'll move you to part-time. Let's figure out ways that you can still be productive and professionally challenged, but you're taking care of your family first. And that takes a frontline supervisor who has a relationship with their individual employee and knows what's going on in their life and can be open-minded to ways to solve the problem.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to your earlier statements. I saw it in your email signature. It's kind of all over the place. What does it again say it in your words?
Leave well, lead well, serve better. I mean, our job is actually to be leaders. We need to step up and lead. Decisions are made by those who show up, right? And so we need to lead. But at the end of the day, what we need to do is be servant leaders better than just action leaders. And those with servant hearts, those who are feel that they are here, put on this earth to help others in that situation, those are the servant leaders I want working on my team.
That's what I was looking for. The leaders that show up, make the decisions. I love it. A couple more here. Jeff Friedman said, no doubt this has changed drastically with the events this year, but today, what keeps you up at night? The age old question.
Well, I tell everybody this, that even this, when I go to bed, I sleep hard. I'm not the kind of guy typically who wakes up in the 2 a.m. or can't fall asleep. When I go to bed, I'm tired and I sleep hard. And when the alarm goes off, I'm up and ready to go again. So not a lot keeps me up at night, but I understand the intent of the question. Clearly, cybersecurity always keeps me on my toes. Just because no matter how good you are, somebody else is trying to be better. And in a situation like I'm in, my job is to protect 13,000 employees in the city. And I got some really smart people who know how to do that. So that's probably one of my top ones. The other is always comes back to culture and leadership is how do I influence my executive peers to actually move in the direction I think they should move. And I don't do that with a hammer, and I don't do that with I work for the CEO, so listen to me. I try to do that with understanding their business, understanding their issues they're trying to solve, and giving them creative ways to solve their immediate problems with that reconfigure operations and rethink service delivery view. So that constantly is in my mind is that might keep me up is what's the best way to influence people to the logical state you want them to be in without forcing them to be there. You got to help them get there themselves. I know I used my Yogi Berra line before, right? When you come to a fork in the road, pick it up, right? It's not about left or right. It's about taking advantage of what's in front of you at that moment to get people in the direction you need them to go.
I love that. So quick pivot here. You know, as we think about dialed in is all about being the most adaptable to change, right? It's not about being the smartest or the fastest or the strongest. It's just about being adaptable. And that really embodies IT. So throughout your history, your career, I'm sure you've had people that have inspired you along the way and probably picked up some words of wisdom. You've already shared a lot with us here, but who has been some of your biggest inspirations and, you know, what are some words that you live by?
You know, I'm not a good person to just spout off books and quote things myself. I do love reading history, and I do love reading about other people's leadership opportunities. But real mentors are people that you've been in the trenches with. General Joe Robles was the CEO at USAA for a long period of time. And I got to work under him. I worked under 3 different CEOs while I was an executive there, but he was far and above one of the best mentors. He actually is the one who taught me the Yogi Berra statement. So I've always carried that with me. But, you know, I think to your point is we all have mentors that we see in front of us that we either want to emulate or we say, if I ever act like that, smack me in the head. And I think both are important because it helps us see who we want to be. And what I learned from Joe was you're nothing without your people. And the beauty of Joe was he was a Pentagon budget planner for a big part of his time in the Army. And what he understood was the value of the fuel truck and the chow line. And so for every frontline soldier, there was 7 to 10 in the back that had to handle logistics. And if you didn't feed them, they couldn't fight. And if you didn't give them fuel, the tanks couldn't move. And so what he taught me was you might want to be the person up on the front with all the courage, and you might want to be the hero, but the real heroes are in the back. The real heroes are the ones who just drudge through it every single day and do the things they need to do and make sure that the people in the front have what they need. Those are your servants. And so I always think of the fuel truck analogy, right? And IT is just a fuel truck. No matter how much we want to boast about how cool things are and how big we are and whatever, we're just fuel trucks. At the end of the day, our organizations are there for a specific purpose to serve a customer or a resident in our case. They don't give a crap about the technology. They just want it to be easy. They just want to get what they need. They want to trust government and they want to make sure that their family's lives are better than when they started the day. And so we're just fuel trucks or food lines or whatever it is. And we need to know our place and we need to know how important those roles are in order to accomplish the goal, even if you don't get the credit. So General Joe Robles is my mentor. He taught me the essence of logistics and the people in the back. And what that translated to at USAA was every single person who helped a call center employee take a call and take care of that member on that call. And that helped you connect the dots to the purpose of the organization.
Oh, wow, I love that. And you know, it's a testament, right? Because you can see, as you explained, you can see some of his leadership kind of in you. You've carried that with you well. So, you know, if only all of us could have a good mentor like that, that's awesome.
Now, if we had a lot more time, I'd tell you a bunch of other mentors that I said, hell no, I don't want to be like that either. So,
No. Okay. We'll take that one offline. Cool. So, what is, you know, right now, like, what is the biggest area, like focus area related to your role or not, even personal, that you are like the most curious about right now and learning more, or maybe you already are learning more about it?
Well, whether I've chosen to or not, I'm becoming a public health expert. I'm clearly not an expert, right? But in everything we're doing, I have many, many doctors and public health officials that I work with every day. And I have learned a lot about contagious disease and managing a public health environment. So that the spin to your question is that has made me, you know, think about things that I traditionally am not interested in, that just be more open-minded to. You know, if somebody said, hey, would you like to learn about Metro Health before? I would like, no, not really. That's where they're good. But what I've really learned inside of that is the culture and the dynamics and the processes that support that and where they're screwed up and where they work well and how do we make those improvements. So I think, you know, I personally am at a stage in my career where I just want to help people fix things, but I want to fix them in the right direction. One of the lessons I learned from time in the Coast Guard was in a storm, you got to keep one eye on the horizon and the other eye on the wave. Because if you take your eye off the horizon, you drive around in circles. But if you take your eye off the wave, it's going to slam you and roll you over. So I think there's a lot of people who love strategy or love execution. And that's an analogy for you got to be good at doing both at the same time. And you got to have some experience doing that. And so this whole concept with Metro Health has really kind of helped me think about how do I help them in the fight. Every single day it's a fight. How do I help them? But constantly trying to keep my eye on the horizon for them so I can get them guided in the right direction. They're always going in the right direction.
Oh, man, I love it. You have some of the best one-liners, and they're not just like one-liners that stop. It's like one-liners with context. So, guys, if you're going to watch a replay, go back, rewind that. Watch some of these clips in here because like the one-liners plus the context, completely valuable, insightful. Thank you so much, Greg. The number's arbitrary here, but if you had an extra $100,000 of budget, how would you spend it and why?
Pay raises for all my people.
There we go. Good answer. And then last thing, is there anything that I didn't ask you that if you were in my shoes, you would have asked yourself?
Oh, dude, man, you caught me off guard with that one.
Got one. If not, that just means I'm a great interviewer.
You are. This has been a great interview. I mean, this has flowed really well, and you've asked some great questions, so you made me very comfortable. You are a great interviewer.
Cool.
No, nothing that comes to mind. I just want people to know that. Let me just say, I just want people to know that I did exactly the same thing that most people think about. If you were asked to go take a leadership role at a at a city or county government, we'd all think about parks and recreation on TV. And, you know, is that what it's really like to work in city government? And I just wanted you to know, I felt exactly the same way. And when I stepped into that organization, I said, I was so wrong. And we can't have biases like that. People are good. And when people have purpose and when people know what their job is, they'll do anything for you. And this is just another great example of that. So I'd love people just to know, when you're good in, when you're comfortable in your career, find places you can serve more than you can go just to make money. Take an opportunity to change your community.
Thanks for listening to Dialed In. This show is brought to you by Acuerdo.io, the world's first orchestration agency for the future of work. Go check us out at Acuerdo.io. This show could also not be put together without great partners, Robin Austin and Casey Yarbrough of Elevate Exchange, membership for IT leaders. And remember, to win in life, to win in business, to win in your career, it's not about being the strongest, the fastest, or the smartest, simply about being the most adaptable to change, the most dialed in.